Hi, Rebecca.
Hey, hey, Caitlin.
How are you?
I'm singing a lot of stuff from junior high in my head right now. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I want to know why you're singing your junior high soundtracks in your head right now.
My spouse has decided that she is going to watch all of Paul Rudd's films, mostly in chronological order. When she can't get a hold of the earlier films, they have to wait to come in on, eBay orders or things like that. But it means within this week, of the three movies I've watched in the last 3 weeks, two have been Paul Rudd films, and his first and third film were Clueless and Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet. And I definitely had both of those soundtracks growing up, but Romeo and Juliet was a very big part of my junior high experience. So, yeah. Wasn't quite sure what to do with that blast from the past. What have you been up to?
What have I been up to? I can't really focus on much of I can't really focus on things that are serious right now. So I have been revisiting my favorite TV shows, and I have been sort of ushering forward a few friends in my life through their first viewings of, in my opinion, seminal Bravo reality TV shows. So I've been really enjoying that. And I downloaded The Sims 4 and have been playing it for hours. So I just got off of a, what time is it? I just got off of a 5 hour stint of playing The Sims. My Sims are married with three children. One is a gardener, the other is an artist. They're moving up their career paths, and
Okay,
they
so that's what two of the
accidentally
kids
had,
do. What does the third
well,
child
that
do?
was, those were the two parents, and
Oh.
the children were accidents. In as far as,
You can set that feature on the game, Caitlin.
well, they tried for the first baby, and they had this baby. And then I wanted them to have a second baby because I make my Sims so focused on their careers that they don't pay that much attention to their children. And then instead of having one baby, they had twins. So I had to turn it off because
Are you doing okay, friend?
got overwhelmed. I got overwhelmed playing The Sims, but it's okay. It's been a good exercise for me. To just blast some music, play The Sims. Yeah, that's what I've been doing.
Okay.
I'm excited to talk with you today because this is something that I didn't know I wanted to talk about. And so, for all of our listeners, when I started reading Lesfic, and when Rebecca and I decided to do this podcast, I sort of pinpointed a piece of fiction on the internet as my jumping off point for that. And Rebecca very kindly read it for the first time, and we are going to revisit slash visit it today.
I think I'm going to learn things about you I've never known before. I plan on listening a lot this episode, and I promise to repay the favor, and we can go through one of my first experiences with a book that I really held on to for a long time and get the young baby gave me reaction to it years later. I don't feel it would be fair for me in any capacity to introduce this work. Can I just ask you to do it?
Sure.
Cool.
And if I sound chirpier than usual, it's because I'm so excited. So today we are talking about a piece of fiction titled More Than You Know, which can be found on the free website, fictionpress.com. I want to set the scene. I want to take us back about over a decade ago to baby Caitlin, who had just moved. I just moved from North Carolina to the beach and was really angsty, dealing with a lot of feelings of displacement and loneliness, and I just desperately wanted new kinds of stories, and I didn't know what I was craving. I was a kid who grew up with a lot of Sailor Moon, and I was reading vampire stories, and I loved stuff about werewolves and like kind of misfits. And I loved romance. I think I've spoken about that before on this podcast, like how much I loved and sought out romantic stories, but never felt satisfied. And this is all coupled with me discovering my own talent and my own interest in writing and creating stories. But at the time, as a young teenager, I didn't realize that I could write original fiction, and I didn't realize that I could write my own story. I didn't know what my story was. So I started writing and reading fan fiction.
So I'm going to pause. I want you to keep going, but I have to pause.
Yes.
Who, you, was it Sailor Moon coupling that you wrote? No, you did Phantom of the Opera fanfic. No, that was the MySpace thing.
I also did Phantom of the Opera fan fiction.
Was it always Christine and...
No, so my Phantom of the Opera fan fiction was really... It's actually very similar to my writing style now. It's like vignettes, very poetic. I wrote from the... If y'all are familiar with the Gaston Leroux original Phantom of the Opera novel, there is a character named Little James, and she is a young ballerina in the opera ranks. She's friends with Madame Giry's daughter. She's just a ballerina, and I wrote a ton of fan fiction about her. So like this ancillary character watching the Phantom of the Opera romance and feeling like it was so angsty. It was so much. And then I started writing Harry Potter fan fiction, which was, it sort of followed the same thing. It was like an ancillary character on the outskirts.
Okay, who was your Potter thing? Because...
So I was writing pre-Harry fan fiction. So I was really interested in his father, James, Sirius, Lupin, Wormtail, that whole group, that whole setting of Hogwarts at that time. I was really interested, you know, in this, they're on the precipice of war and this great tragedy. So I was writing that, but I was reading everything I could get. And basically, I ended up on kind of any website you could think of. I was on Leaky Cauldron. I think there was a website, harrypotterfanfiction.net. Like, you name it, I was on it. And so I found fanfiction.net and, you know, was just devouring stories like mad. And fanfiction.net had and has, they both still exist, which is incredible, a sister website, fictionpress.com, which was where people posted their original fiction, poetry, and nonfiction. And so I crossed over because some of my favorite fanfic writers were posting on this other website, and I found the slash stuff first. I found the like male-centric stuff first, and I found this story pretty soon after, More Than You Know. And for the longest time, it was the only story that I could stomach that was decently written on this website that was WLW. It was really, really interesting to go back and read this as an adult.
I can't wait to ask you some questions about this.
Yeah. Well, and so when I originally asked you if we could do this episode, I had these grand plans that I was going to track down the author. Her username is coldcoffeeeyes25. Her profile on Fiction Press says that her name was Anna, and at the time, so it was last updated in 2011, she was 34 years old, a nurse on the East Coast, and she was publishing racier stuff that was too graphic sexually for Fiction Press on a now defunct website, Witchfix. This person, Cold Coffee Eyes 25, is elsewhere on the internet, including fanfiction.net, publishing Harry Potter fiction, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Ringer, a lot of queer stuff, lots of really sexy stuff, some straight. There's been no activity on any of the accounts since 2011. Those of you who were on Fiction Press and fanfiction.net in the early 2010s, remember that we were all concerned that the website was going to get bought by some big conglomerate and that all of the stories were going to disappear. So there was an underground movement that I found the website for of people who found email addresses for authors and reached out to them to sort of archive their fiction on the internet so it would still be available if these websites went under. So in 2013, this collective emailed Cold Coffee Eyes 25 at an AOL address to try to put their story onto another website. They didn't see a response. Part of my job is finding people on the internet and finding information about people on the internet. So I got a little creepy and I dug around using various combinations of username, age, AOL email address, demographic, couldn't find anything, found an obit that just didn't fit, and I couldn't find this person. But this, I can't even explain the way that I want to how important this piece of writing was to me, and that its importance is only clear to me now.
So you found this when you were in high school or right around?
I found this when I first was in high school.
Okay. I'm just doing the math in my head. So I'm just thinking timeline-wise of, you know, you spoke previously about Lady College being your awakening, but you know, that thing where you start to really look back and you unpack. Mm-hmm. Well, this might be where I admitted it, but here were all the breadcrumbs leading up to
it. Exactly. This story was last updated and like it was finished in 2009. So right when I was finishing high school.
You were finishing high school. I'm happy for you.
Yeah.
I was long out of college.
Listen, I'm a 70-year-old woman trapped in a young person's body, and we just have to all get over that. But at this time, I didn't know that I was queer. I didn't know that much about myself, to be honest. Like, I just sort of existed. And even if I had a conception that I wasn't straight, I was so not looking for stories where I could find myself. I was sort of looking for things where I could hide myself in. So like fantastical adventures and these grand sweeping romances and like mythic things. The L word, just to like give people points of reference, the L word wasn't on my radar at all, except I found a few sex scenes kind of by accident, and I would like watch those on YouTube when I was feeling some kind of way. But I like didn't have access to Showtime, so it just didn't occur to me. This website was really community-based Fiction Press. People would upload chapters one by one, and sometimes you would wait like months for a new chapter to be uploaded. And there definitely are some rougher ones, and then there are some that, you know, the success story was somebody would self-publish or publish a version of a work that they had put onto Fiction Press in the first place. So you felt like you were part of the team and part of this process of people becoming writers.
So it was like a collection of betas.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And all of this is a long introduction to say that that's what we're talking about today. So More Than You Know, it's a 52-chapter, 114,000-word story, last updated in November 2009. There is a sequel that this author started to post. The sequel only has 15 chapters and has not been updated since 2011, which I'm still bitter about.
You can always take that on, Caitlin.
No. See, like, this is it. No.
Did I just say something sacrilegious? I don't know.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
I am happy to, like, kick us off and give, like, a cursory, this is how we open the story. But I'm interested because this was your first time in, as I understand it, like, reading something on this website.
I do want to clarify, it wasn't my first time reading fan fiction or reading...
Yeah.
So AO3, Archive of Our Own, didn't really come into my worldview until the last couple of years, which is odd considering everybody around me has been reading it for a very long time. Somehow I just didn't get on that train. I missed it completely. But you have like Xena fanfiction or xenafiction.net, which has a bunch of Radcliffe's early work. I'm cautious to even say that here because I'm always worried it's going to come down. And for people who are a little tight on a budget, I lean them that way to try to point out some of the early writings before the books were published and some of the stories were cleaned up. And then I had a website by two writers that did specially fan fiction, the couple from South of Nowhere. And I read the crap out of all of those stories. This would have been 2009, 2010. So about that time. So I do have a history of reading things online, but Fiction Press has never been on my radar prior to you saying something about it. I'm in a very unique situation where I thoroughly believe in honoring the things that people love, especially when they encounter them, mm-hmm. because not everything moves or ages or goes to other people as well. And you want the people you give those favorite things to take them in. And I want to be that person who takes all this in for you. So I'm really excited because I have the privilege of knowing you. So there are certain things in here I'm like, oh, I can completely see like what's mm-hmm. exciting to Caitlin. And then there's the other part of me where if we were talking one-on-one, I may not be as apprehensive as I'm going to express things here and be very cautious with my language. But because other people are listening in and I do PR stuff occasionally, I'm very careful with my language.
So I want to...
Do we need to give a warning before we get into this?
We need to give a warning. Okay. I want to...
Let me rephrase. Ahead. Can I say we should give a warning before we get into this?
We are giving a warning before we're getting into this. This is totally a case of revisiting something that you used to really care a lot for. And upon further... like looking at it again, being like, oh, wow. So this story is about a woman, Liberty, who comes into her own as a queer woman and as just like an independent person coming out of a childhood where she's been steeped in white nationalism. And her mother and her brother are very involved in white supremacist causes. That's a major plot point of this story, which is in the, like, it's in the description. So at first I was like, okay, like, I get it. When I reread this story now, because this is a story about a woman becoming more educated, learning more about herself, there's a lot of stuff that gets presented as her prior worldview and the worldview of her family that is so deeply and intrinsically offensive, but is not presented with any warning, like trigger warning, or it's not until later in the story that you realize that this character is aware that this is wrong and offensive. So it was actually deeply unsettling thing to revisit as an adult. There's some like really uncomfortable aspects of this piece of fiction that, yeah.
Yeah. But on the flip too, when I read things that are dated, and I'm only saying this for dated material, uh-huh. and it inherently makes me pause or aware and think to myself, this would not be possibly created with the same words put together, I also take that as, thank goodness that means growth. So I don't want to undermine anything. I think work exists in a bubble to some extent, and I'm here for the bubble of this. And I just want to let you know, going forward, any questions I have are not judgment based. It's not based around the language or this. We are also two white women, and there's a back narrative of white supremacy, and that's a lot.
It is a lot. And
but also there's a lot of blowing stuff up, and there's a lot of recognition of that. And I think a lot of times when I get uncomfortable with it, it's because I feel that I'm projecting towns we lived in into this narrative a lot. I am projecting people we've encountered in our life into things. So,
yeah, I mean, it's not lost on me as I reread this that the major side plot, which really does deal with hate crimes, white supremacy, her family's direct
murder,
like impact in the real world, like their worldviews, like destroying people's lives, takes place in cities where
we've lived,
where I have family, and you know, we spend a lot of time there. And so I wonder how that plays into my initial readings of this when I was first finding this, because this is also a story that I revisited. So I found it in high school, and then I definitely read it in college, and I sent it to your spouse.
Yes, she's talked to me a few times about it, so.
Yeah, and then, like, I've read it once more recently, but never really critically. I think when you know the story and you sort of know what to look for, it's easy to know which chapters to jump to for, like, the romance or for the angst.
And they're in here.
Yeah, there's a lot. Oh,
God. Oh, the angst.
Let me tell you all, I still cried. I knew what was coming, and I still cry.
Well, so I think it's important for us to realize that, of course, there's heavy things in here. But there are things you inherently loved in your first readings. There are things that you go back to. And me showing so much apprehension is me. It's nothing about the narrative. That's stuff that I parse through. So I don't want us to get stuck on that, because you and I have levity in what we do and our friendship, and I want to get back to that. So how about you give us the scene, Caitlin? Explain to us this world we get into. Let us into what's so enticing to you in the beginning. Let that energy shine that I can see on your face even as I'm asking you right now.
Our story opens freshman college move-in day. Young Liberty Keller is helped by her mother, her stepfather, and her brother. They're moving her into her dorm at Jubilee College, which is a conservative Christian college in the Midwest. Right from the beginning, we quickly see the not very casual racism that her family exhibits towards people of color and anyone who is not white, Germanic, what they deem as worthy. We also learn really quickly that Liberty is beyond ready to live beyond the world of her family. She's excited for this chance to be in college to expand her life, and that she is a low-grade pop star.
Yeah, she's using a nom de plume at school.
Yes, she's at school under a false name because she has more than one album, but her most recent album and her single, More Than You Know, ranked high in the charts. She was on all of the popular daytime television, magazines, newspapers, and so she's nervous that people at college are going to recognize her as this blonde, blown out, sort of folky, country, crossing into pop star.
Okay, so here's our age difference. Where is Hannah Montana?
Existing at the same time.
Okay. Yeah. So back to your narrative. I'm sorry. I should have looked that up, but now you'll hear me on my phone, so I'm just going to ask you.
Yeah, that was existing at the same time. So this story for me sort of takes place in three parts. There's her when she first arrives at school, and we as readers are shown that she is a really talented singer. There's a whole backstory. Basically, her mom let her become like a secular pop singer as kind of a sleeper agent to be like the Trojan horse of some of their more insidious ideals. But Liberty has always really been kept separate from the business of her family. And she takes voice lessons and she applies to music colleges to see if she can get in. She knows she can't, you know, go to the East Coast. She can't go to a city, but she wants to prove to herself that she can get into Juilliard, and we get to see her interviews, and other music schools. Instead, she goes to a Christian university that rung a bell for me with some very, like, I think we know what type of university this is referring to, with mandatory chapel, prayers, curfews.
And it's Christian, not Catholic. Is it its own... We've disclosed that we went to school in Virginia, I guess. Like, there, between there, North Carolina and South Carolina, there are certain colleges that, when I had to create that background narrative, that is the campus I was on every single time.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. 100%.
Like, it was like walking onto one particular campus in my head every time.
Yep. Yeah. She talks a lot about... That actually was a thread that, for me, this read-through was really strong, because there's a suspension of disbelief that you have to take with this story, that nobody recognizes this pop star as she's in college and undergoing the series of events. But she makes several comments that the girls that she's hanging out with, the people that are at this school, are really devoted to, like, religious music, pop rock Christian. And so there's a fun undercurrent and storyline in this first section of the story of sort of mean girls. Like, they're all auditioning for the choir. In the back of her mind, she's like, I've already done, you know, I've auditioned for Juilliard. I am doing X, Y, and Z. This is not that important to me. And it's an interesting dynamic that I think is really mature, like a mature writer. It's an interesting plot point of the different viewpoints that Liberty takes from her classmates. And a lot of this beginning is her feeling very different and separated out from the people that she's at college with.
There's a lot of early hints to really... I can't imagine releasing anything chapter by chapter, because if you edit a plot point and you've already have, you got to be a lot of a panster to do this, or a really intense plotter, because you can't go back after you've posted one of these chapters and be like, just kidding, we're going to put this character in and switch this. So you're constantly moving forward. But early on, I think the first chapter is the documentary video that they're filming. But as she's walking into her dorm room, her brother helps finish moving her in. They're going to go grab a meal and the family's leaving. She comes back and the sister to her roommate is on the floor going through CDs and saying, my sister took my CDs. She can't have these. So there's always this kind of like low hum of anxiety about somebody tying something to her that I thought was really, if you're doing this plot point or whatever, I thought it was a lot of breadcrumbs early on, and I think that's a really strong sign of a writer who understands their story really well, because putting those hints in there is really hard to do. So
there's a lot of hints towards I agree with you, and in my estimable fiction press experience, not everyone is as good of a plotter or like as good at laying breadcrumbs for you. So not only do we get her always present low grade anxiety about being recognized for who she is, but also there are undercurrents of her being in a different space from her family and getting what's the word? Validation that mm-hmm. her family's viewpoint is wrong. She makes a comment as she's talking about her classes very early on, where she's in a history class and she's like, none of this matches what my mom taught me. And like this whole
and college. And she's saying can't that at wrong. A arguably yeah. incredibly, yeah.
yeah. Which is amazing. Like that's an amazing thing.
There was a scene that made me laugh out loud in that kind of uncomfortable laughter where they take the plot point of a hate group and then compare it to a more acceptable gathering of people and say all the things they really have in common versus like the one adjective that separates them. So she does a lot of comparison of her family versus other Christians, her family versus other educators, her family mm-hmm. versus other musicians. And it's all the common tie except the one thread that everybody gets hung up on. And that's what leads to the atrocious acts. And I thought the structure of breaking down the commonality and then finding the one stupid thing that makes it acceptable to be so atrocious was an interesting point. And when you were talking about validation, it makes me think about when she's talking with her mom and her mom says, you're not going to school out east, why does it matter? And she says, but I need to know I could have gotten in.
Yeah.
And that kind of drive. And I saw a lot, I want to word this well, I didn't see you as this character, but I did see that push to be, I work really hard and I want to be validated, and being told by one school I got in and that was enough is not going to say that all this hard work I've done showcases what is within me, because arguably, you know, dumb luck can sometimes get you into places just as much.
Yeah.
So I see that drive, and I'm projecting that drive into you of where you may have put yourself, because it is definitely in this, in Liberty's character, is this push to be plus what she's been told she can be.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I want to keep asking you about other places within the course of this, if we can keep going forward with like a really broad,
for sure,
broad look over of this.
Yes,
because it was so dear to you for so long, and I'm really intrigued when we ingest language and words about what sticks to us, and then what when we reread it, what sticks out this later.
Yeah.
So let's keep going, because we haven't even got to Max yet.
Can I pour another glass of wine?
You grabbed your drink. Are you ready to talk to me about Max?
Yeah. So Maxine Kent is introduced to us pretty early on in the narrative. She is the only person who knows who Liberty is, and she's at first a little antagonistic about it. So Max is a junior. She is Black. She is also in the choir and is sort of surrounded by this aura of mystery and confidence that Liberty is immediately drawn to, even though their first few interactions are so contentious. Max is the only person who A, knows that Liberty is a pop star, and B, knows who her family is. And she constantly pushes Liberty because she recognizes that, like, to Liberty's family, she is not someone that they would want their daughter to be around. And we learn as Max and Liberty get closer that Max is a junior who transferred from Wellesley. Liberty has a funny comment where she was like, if you were at Wellesley, why would you ever transfer to a place like this? And we learn that Max's father is a reverend, and he found out that she was having relationships with multiple other women at Wellesley and sort of picked her up and packed her off to this college to finish.
That's school. The most unbelievable part of this narrative. It's a woman attending a ladies' college, as we call them, uh-huh. and possibly being with other, that never happens.
Oh yeah. I mean, that doesn't track at all.
I married a women's college graduate, so I can't talk.
Oh, well, I really quickly want to talk, because it's so prevalent in, I think, like, lesbian Twitter and like lesbian mm-hmm. culture right now, about the yearning that is in these early Max and Libby scenes.
Can you,
sure.
Yearning, question mark?
Yearning, yes. So
what's the difference between yearning and angst?
Okay, so angst, I would say, when I think of this story, I think of, okay, yearning is Max and Libby at night on the bus on that choir trip. It's the first time they've been this close together, and they touch hands.
The brushing of the fingers.
Sitting next to each other, the brushing of the fingers. And at first, Libby moves her hand because she's like, oh, I must be crowding her. And Max instead seeks her out, and they like end up holding hands in the dark. And it's this taut, still moment where like Liberty is just, her whole body is alive, and her mind is just racing with like, what is this? What does this mean? What do I want? What does this make me?
Right.
Whereas angst is, angst is Liberty getting sold out, spoiler alert, by Max to the paparazzi, and that scene where they're leaving the motel and Max has called the paparazzi to ambush Liberty and get a photo of the two of them kissing. And Liberty is like on a plane crying. That to me, and like sitting in her own feelings and like drinking a Diet Coke with sunglasses and just wallowing, that to me is the angst. There's so much angst in this story.
You look so pained right now. Like, you just look like you wear this on your shoulders.
I told someone when I was talking to them about this story and like about the fact that we were going to do that, I said, I forgot how traumatic this story is. Like, if you were living this experience, this is traumatic and angsty. But these early interactions where like the scene on the bus, the scene after the bus when they're sharing a bed because they're like on tour with their choir, and they're touching, but Liberty won't really let Max kiss her yet. And Max says like, why is this wrong? Why can't this happen? I can tell that you want it. And Liberty says the line, like, the minute I do this, I will turn into a thing that my mother hates, and I've never done that before. That to me was
kid.
And then she still does it. She still has this first sexual encounter with Max. That to me is yearning. Comment. Everyone send us comments. What do you think is the definition of lesbian yearning? Because I refuse to acknowledge, like, to accept that it is spitting in people's mouths. I don't like that as a thing that we are rallying around in the lesbian community. And just
I'm
because,
so sorry. What now?
Yeah, there are now two recent lesbian movies of spitting into each other's mouths.
Okay, yeah.
And evidently that's like the hot, sexy thing to do when you really want to be with somebody. And I refuse. I refuse.
I mean, I saw the Rachel and Rachel film.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel Weisz and Rachel McAdams film. And that,
yeah.
Yeah. Whose name is eluding me now? It starts with a D.
Deliverance?
No, that's the.
Well, the other spitting movie is Portrait of a Woman on Fire.
No, it's Disobedience.
Yes, Disobedience.
Yeah. Deliverance. Caitlin, you live near Appalachia. You should definitely know what Deliverance is.
What's that?
But that's what people are considering yearning? Like, yeah, okay.
Well, I feel like a lot of people have taken, like, the word yearning, and it's, like, the word of the year to be instead of angst, to be instead of whatever. And so, like, there's all these jokes that are, like, you're worried about having a crush during COVID. Like, welcome to lesbian yearning. I've been, like, writing letters to one person for the past year, and I've never met them. Or, like, you know, it's...
Okay.
Yeah. I think, like, Gentleman Jack, like, all of these new period pieces.
Well, in my head, I was like, and you guys can definitely send us all the Gentleman Jack gifs,
yeah,
because I do not get enough of them.
Yeah.
So. Freaking Ann Lister.
Well, without going plot, I'm doing the thing that I always try to keep us on track with doing, which is plot point by plot point, which I don't want to do.
Blow this up. This is about you and this narrative. Well, so blow it up, Caitlin.
I want to just say that if you haven't read this, just know, broad brush, there is an illicit lesbian relationship between Max and Liberty. There is family drama with Liberty's mother and brother. A lot of Liberty's coming into her own as a queer woman is tied to also her financial independence and cutting her family off from her money that she makes as a musician. And there's some pretty heavy stuff about like what her money has been used for by those in power over her while she was still a minor. Max is a really complicated character. She comes from a long line of people involved in civil service tied to causes that directly put them sort of like in the line of fire against Liberty's family. And so there's some really heavy narratives in this story that are really secondary to the romance, which is not how I remembered this. I remembered Max and Liberty getting together. They're in a relationship that's illicit, and they're in a college where if they're caught having this type of relationship, they can get kicked out, which is kind of like you kind of get tricked into thinking that that's the worst thing that can happen to them in this story. And then you quickly realize like, oh no, this college situation is like tip of the iceberg. It doesn't even matter. Just so interesting as a story, as a narrative device. Max, like I said, is complicated and is forced to make some decisions that in this story feels like a betrayal of Liberty. My favorite moment in this story is when Liberty, there are a few moments of this where she comes into her own. Of course, this is so stereotypical. She comes into her own as a businesswoman and like as someone in charge of her own brand and identity, and like she's taking charge of her own career as it relates to being an out queer woman. And like those scenes make me still tear up. Like those are the scenes that I remember. Her kind of like just showing up at her record label to change her bank account so that her stepfather can't get her money anymore. Or there's a great scene where she's on a conference call with the PR representatives of her record label, and she's been outed in the press by Max. And her record label is like, this is, you know, your audience is white, conservative, Christian, young. And so we can play this off. We can say that you were set up and, you know, we can recoup all of this. It'll be great. And she says, okay, well, what's the other option? You said there were two options. They said, I mean, well, you could come out? Question mark. And I think she sways them by saying, like, yeah, I wrote a song and I have this demo that I cut. And so the last half of this story is her really dealing with the repercussions of what her family has done to the world, the real life implications of her family's worldviews on people's lives. There's murder, there's court cases, there's a lot of opera talk, there's a lot of pop singer talk.
I really love that line where she's given the libretto and she's told to copy the first 10 pages, and she says it's all in Spanish. And she said, no, darling, if you're going to learn to sing at this octave, you need to understand what Italian is.
Yeah. And
as a person who can't sing but absolutely loves opera, that just made me chuckle out loud. I thought that was great. And then she ends up doing a German opera eventually because good old Mozart, you know, you can't work the magic flute ever. But yeah, there's a lot of like little the comedy, the funny things in here are very much aimed at the comedy of those who know versus mm-hmm. the comedy of those who are still learning. Mm-hmm. But it never feels malicious. I like it a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's really interesting because we as readers get to see Liberty come into her own as an independent woman, someone who's out and proud and like separate from her family and has her own point of view and opinions and people surrounding her. We see that mirrored in her musical career. So we see her exploring opera and becoming stronger and more sure in her choices of what she wants to do as a musician and the music that she's putting out into the world and where her comfort is in showing herself through music. Mm-hmm. Which is it's powerful. It's a good line to follow. Yeah.
This came out, I haven't read the second part that is unfinished currently, but this first part finished in 2009 or 2010?
This part finished in 2009. And okay.
I was thinking, you know, it made me occasionally think about Jennifer Knapp, the Christian singer who came out in 2010, but this came out before her, so.
It's interesting for a story that's obviously taking pieces from, like, at the time, current pop performers or current people who had to contend with being outed or, like, being out in the public eye. There's no real, nobody's named. There's no situation that you could point to and say, like, oh, she drew that from this tabloid or this magazine, which is why I think this is so timeless. You know, if this was chock full of references from 2000 and whenever, I don't know if it would have been as powerful for me of a story because this writing is really interesting. This author is really interesting because the story is so full of detail and is so rich, but the descriptions and Liberty's interior life are so void of images or figures, like people, culture, pop culture, that it's timeless, which is something that I've been sort of going back and forth with about this story and about even whether to talk about it today, because for me, when I think about it, even in the midst of my discomfort, it feels so timeless. It feels like something that could be written with a few changes today.
Yeah, very few. And I think between taking place as a freshman on campus and then they're on these choir tours, so their life is being mandated similar to a sport athlete's life. Yeah. And then her pop persona and what's going on there and it being managed by her stepdad and her mom and her brother Donner. Everything's kind of out of her hands. So because everything's being done by other people, technology isn't really involved because she's not the one who needs to have access to it. Mm-hmm. I think immediately the only technology things that really kind of stick out to me that I think about is talking about somebody bringing CDs to campus. Nobody does that much anymore. And the AOL, logging onto AOL and her fan website crashing because that is not as prolific as it used to be. Like we used to really be able to shut down websites with just couple thousand people. But the rest, I think that the world and this cosm that she lives in and the lack of autonomy she has over her own life allows it to flow as if it isn't an 11-year-old story.
Yeah. So. For me, the thing that really aged it was it's early on in the story. She's just slept with Max for the first time and she has free time and she goes to a bookstore in a mall. So there you go. But she is like, okay, she goes to a bookstore because she has no other avenue for discovering anything about queer sex, queer identity.
I mean, that was my narrative. I went to Books a Million and found a copy of Ruby Fruit Jungle and Oranges Are Not the Only Fruit because they were kept in stock due to literature classes that required them to be read. So
yeah.
And like, I did that.
It rang true to me, but it rang true to me as a story that was written in a time when
you couldn't Google.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Or YouTube. Exactly. I don't know what my life would have been like had YouTube been an outlet the same way it was for you. Yeah. It's interesting when you talk to people. One of the first people I had the real privilege of talking to on Twitter is Casey Richardson, the author. And we both bonded over reading Alma Mater by Rita Mae Brown. And there is this thing when you share a book or a narrative or this story and you meet other people who do it as well. I feel it's okay to say this, but I recently saw on your Twitter feed, you and another member of the WLW Lesfic reading community, Katie Rye, who writes the Lesbian 52 blog, were both bonding over Fiction Press. This is something you two both are very familiar with. Where it's foreign to me, you guys were immediately able to communicate based on that. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's funny, this whole story, the fact that we're talking about it, the fact that it's like still there, it just, when I read it and when I think about it, it is such a crystallized version of myself that I can see, I can still picture what it felt like to read this for the first time. And
have you printed this out for
no
just in case purposes?
No, it's really long.
It is.
And like Fiction Press changed some of its, there used to be a really bad copying epidemic on Fiction Press. So now you can't even like copy and paste from the pages. Like you can't, I don't even know if I could print this. But like, I think if this story goes away, I will be I'll be sad. I will miss being able to revisit this point in my life. But the fact that at a point in my life, the only queer narrative that I got and that I felt a kinship to so strongly was this one. I don't know how I feel about that now. You know,
I mean, like, I'm not your therapist. I can't. I can tell you where, like, as your friend, there are things about me that I'm like, this makes sense because I feel. I feel I see some of Caitlin's natural drive here, or her, you know, family's incredibly important, but you have to carve out your own path. You can't live for your parents indefinitely. Yeah. Otherwise, you're denying yourself.
My parents are not white supremacists. Like,
No.
I'm just saying that for the people who don't. No, that's not what we're saying.
None of our parents are anything. We're very cautious with how we mention our families.
But I think the story at the heart of this, of having to make your own choices separate from your family and having to watch your family come to terms or not with your identity is something that, like, I certainly was struggling with when I found this, struggled with for a long time afterwards, and still, like, feel really keenly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not your therapist, like I said previously. I can't tell you why you're drawn to this, but as a person who really cares about you and gets to spend time with you, I can see things in here that were not you, but were giving you like the Alice in Wonderland reflection of some of the world as you encountered it occasionally. I feel spoiled that you trusted me, let alone anybody else listening to this, to know this about you. So thank you for that.
Yeah, guys, be gentle. I didn't realize when we set out to do this episode, like, how much I feel like I'm, like, naked in front of the class, you know, like those old nightmares. Like, I'm in my underwear about to make a speech.
It shows that you seek out empathy and you seek out understanding, and that you like the idea of, and you've said, I'm going to use what you did, you know, taking control of her own career, taking control of her own life, having her own sense of self and voice coming from her and being of her. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you hate on anybody for that. So I appreciate you giving us this. And as we said off mic, I will reverse this in a few weeks and we'll reread one of those books that was very important to me. And oh God, little baby gay Becca. Oh my God.
Oh, I can't wait.
Oh, I can.
Thank you for your kindness.
Oh, I look forward to, guys, if you want to talk to Caitlin about this, I'd love to listen to other people talk to her. I feel a little dated on this one.
Y'all are seeing a really interesting version of myself.
To like fangirl, fan gender out for a minute. How, you know, awesome is this community? I mean, really,
I want
to shout out. There's so much like permission to be vulnerable, messy, kind in here. I just, what better community than the WLW community?
The kindness that we've been afforded is incredible. Like, I haven't really experienced this many people who are just excited to talk and like share so much of themselves with us.
And are forgiving if you don't get language right all the time.
Yeah. Alex, you talked to her.
Oh,
too.
I adore Alex. Are you talking to Alex right now?
Yeah. She sent me like no less than maybe 7. So last week on the podcast, I asked for a very specific genre. Mm-hmm. I asked for woman inherits European land/castle, you know, goes abroad, finds the love of her life.
She is the most read person I've ever met, and I am so thankful for our correspondence. I can't begin to tell you.
Yes. Thank you, Alex, for sending me like no less than 7 examples of lesbic in this exact genre that I could read, because let me tell you, if there's one thing about this whole clusterfuck of a world that's happening right now outside of my apartment, it has taught me that I want to own some property. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I want to. And if I can just keep reading lesfic about owning property, it's the culmination of all of my interests.
And then there's a couple other people that I just, the levity of language and the permission to just talk about these books, especially right now, that happening and you choosing to share some of this stuff about this story for you and what it was, this was just a breath of fresh air this week. And goodness knows, I needed it. So thank you. I really appreciate you.
I appreciate you. So we typically end the podcast with what we are reading. Are you reading anything? I'm going to have to say what I'm listening to.
Oh, so basically whatever was tagged last week is still kind of going on, to be quite honest. I haven't consumed much. I'm not going to get heavy, but this week, you know, my focus has been a little bit harder this week. But I am wrapping up finally on the latest Georgia Beers novel. It just sat on my nightstand for a while and I finally got to it. So, So this is my week to be like, y'all, what you reading? Send it my way, please. Or you'll listening get some, to.
You'll get some good ones. I believe it.
What are you currently doing?
I'm reading not lesfic right now. I'm reading the book titled My Autobiography of Carson McCullers, which is by Jen Shapland.
Like Carson McCullers, who wrote The Heart is a Lonely Hunter?
Yeah, so it's a mix of nonfiction, biography, exploring Carson McCullers' queer identity, the author's queer identity, archival work, all of that kind of stuff.
McCullers had a very intriguing life. Were you familiar with McCullers' life at all before this?
Not at all.
McCullers is fascinating.
So fascinating. And so I've been enjoying that. And then I just want to shout out, I just have to, you can cut this out, but
I just want to shout out. If you're shouting somebody out, we're keeping it here.
Nope. It's a Spotify playlist. I'm showing Rebecca because as I said last time, I can't sleep, you guys. I'm really struggling with that. And Spotify sent me this playlist. They sent me a text message about it. So, like, they knew that I needed it. It's called Moonlight Bumps. And it's like lucid dreaming in a playlist. And I love it. It's the only way I can sleep.
We've mentioned a few times about ways we'd like to communicate. Can I kick to you about the best way to continue these conversations?
So if you want to get in touch with us, if you want to talk to any, like either me or Rebecca about anything you heard on today's podcast, you can find us on Twitter at @attpod or at Instagram at @atipofthetongue. I can be found on Instagram at @samesexinthecity. Rebecca can be found on Instagram at @RebeccaWritesARomance. And we're both linked on Twitter from our tip of the tongue tweets. All right, y'all. This has been a tip of the tongue.
Caitlin's saying peace, but you can't really hear her because she's making the symbol.
Yeah. Thank you for spending your
time. Because when it is, doesn't matter. Yeah. We appreciate y'all. There's stuff in the future, and you'll get my geek out probably in a little under a month. But until that time, just keep on keeping on.
Yeah, everyone stay safe, stay healthy. We'll see y'all next time.
Yep. Bye, y'all. Stay away from each other. Deuces.
We just sounded so Southern.
Well, you said y'all like six times.
I've been saying